Josephine of the Future here. Just a couple of notes about this episode. We mentioned it at the top, but I thought I'd mention it again here, that this is a little different from what our normal episodes are. We try to approach even difficult topics with some sense of joviality. This episode is not going to be like that. It's a topic that we can't approach that way, namely the murder of a young trans woman and the subsequent responses to that and our own attempt to deal with that. Jay would also like to pass on their apologies. They mispronounce Brianna Jai's name incorrectly. We discovered this right at the end of the final edit and wanted to make that correction here at the top, so apologies for that. And I hope that you find this conversation useful, helpful, even though it's difficult. This was our attempt to process some very tricky topics. Thank you for listening. Hello, and welcome once again to It Is Complicated, the podcast where we answer every single question with It Is Complicated, including the title of this podcast, which is It Is Complicated. Hello, Dr. J.
Hello, Josephine. I'm not going to ask how you are because...
Fuck. Yes. Dear listener, today we will at least start with a topic that isn't so positive. We like to be very positive on this show. We really do, actually. We tend to be quite cheerful, even if we get into sort of more difficult things. Today's episode, we're not entirely sure where it's going to go, because we're reacting to recent news that has been very difficult and dark. There might be sadness, there might be swearing, there might be things. Content warnings, probably. We're going to be talking about certain issues to do with attacks and crimes that have been happening to LGBT and specifically trans people, and also the emotional state one can get in when this kind of thing happens in our communities. So maybe a topic that for some it might be difficult to listen to, so a bit of a warning for that, and also perhaps not an episode you might want to play in the car if there are small children. What is that thing? Small children and people of a nervous disposition. Everybody I know is of a nervous disposition.
I was going to say, that just describes everybody. My thing is, this is going to possibly be dark. If that's going to trigger you, if that's going to cause issues for you, get yourself safe if you want to listen to this. Make a space if you want to listen. And if you don't want to listen, we totally understand. I mean,
we occasionally have recorded episodes like this when we've responded to difficult things, and most of them we haven't put out.
Some of them have just died instantly. I'm deleting that when we've both recovered from the sobbing.
Yes, but I'm also very aware of how important conversations like these can be. The thing that I genuinely miss from living in London is being able to go to a club like the ones we used to go to, Jay and I, and be able to mourn collectively, because I've been around this community for any amount of time. Unfortunately, you will find there are reasons to mourn. And that's what we used to do at Bar Whatever, for example, or any communal space that we used to go to. We just go and be around others. Sometimes we talk. I've had the honor and difficulty of being the speaker on a few of those occasions, and knowing how important that was for me and for others. So we're going to give it a crack. Also, fair warning, I tend to deal with some of these things with humor, which is not to disrespect anything or anyone. It is a way that I deal with these things. I tend to make absurdist comments about things which I think are utterly absurd. And so, yes, just another warning.
And I might be swearier than usual.
All right. With that in mind, dear Dr. J, who art thou? Introduce yourself before we start swearing.
I'm Dr. J. I use they as a pronoun. I have been able to define myself, which is lucky. I get to define myself in my day job as harbinger of change, because they just allowed me an open text box and said job title and didn't expect me, the chaos demon that I am, to write anything that was slightly stranger than like principal consultant or something. And I wrote harbinger of change. I also got to give myself my own gender, which I now have a birth certificate in the right name with my gender from birth being non-binary. But my gender that I like to describe it as is transgressive non-binary genderqueer, because if you can write your own gender, do it as best as possible. I've been around for 54 years. I've realized in discussions that I've had this week that my longevity is also something to be incredibly proud of. At the moment, I'm going to sound a lot of lower energy than other times you've heard me speak. That is not because I'm low energy. That's because I'm trying to not go into the dark rage-fueled rant that is possibly brewing. I want it to be constructive and positive from all this, because beyond all of this, I'm a troublemaker and a hashtag queer nuisance. And quite frankly, I will get in your face and just keep being in your face about this until there is no breath left in my body, because that's the only way I can think of getting through this. So, Josephine, that's a very dark intro. That's almost like I've turned into the Mysterious Surge version of myself. But my mysterious urge is to exist as a queer person openly and in your face.
That's a video game reference for those of you who may not au fait, but
Au fait rune.
which is a very good joke if you happen to be au fait rune with the particular video game that you're referencing. Well done. Good job. I like to start with a good Dungeons and Dragons pun in every conversation.
So, Josephine, for Heather, what art thou?
I am a Tiefling bard. No, my well, in another life, I am. My name is Josephine Baird. I am a lecturer at the University of Uppsala. I was recently actually asked what I did for a job, and I said, that's my proper job. My real job is making whatever I can get away with. And that is, I guess, my raison d'être. It's kind of like the one common thread through all the weird lives that I've led. I've been an actor at some point. I've been a comedian. I've been something of an activist. I have been a visual artist. I've been unemployed and, an independent scholar, which is an unemployed academic. And now I am an academic who teaches at the University of Uppsala game design department. And I teach on game design. I'm also pursuing once again a PhD, and one day I will get one. And at the same time, because I'm not busy enough, and this is actually another of my coping mechanisms, I wrote a novel recently called Where It All Started, which is illustrated by the fabulous Suzanne Shiflett. It is available for free right now at whereitallstartednovel.com, where you can read it in text format and see the pretty pictures, or you can listen to the audio version as a download or podcast. It is me here in the house doing it by myself, so quality is what it is. But we try to make these things accessible, and we release a new chapter every week. By the time you hear this, it's very possible we're nearly done, if not completely done already. So you can see and read and hear my novel over there. I'm pleased to. I'm quite proud of it, actually. The more I work on it, I realize that I am. And it is another way of coping with the way life can be. The way we are misrepresented, the ways in which we are put into boxes and forced to consider our lives in certain ways because those are the ways we are told to consider them. The two protagonists have exactly one issue with their lives, which is that they're trying to deal with what everyone thinks they should be. And this causes all kinds of trouble. But it's worth it in the end, I hope. So please do go check that out. It would make me very happy if you did. And otherwise, I like to think of myself as a femme of international mystery, only because it sounds tremendously fun. And that is the job I really want. So there you
And you
go.
use she as pronouns,
I
correct?
do. I use she, her pronouns exclusively. However, after a recent podcast that Jay and I have recorded and is probably not out yet, we discovered that there is a possibility, ever so slight, that maybe I'm a little bit more gender fluid than I'd like to suggest. And maybe they might slip into there now and again. Who knows?
Maybe it's one of those things of we are all quite gender fluid and it's a spectrum and not a fucking binary.
Eyebrows, eyebrows.
Eyebrows, eyebrows. So,
So today, what are
shall
we
we give
talking
the,
about today?
shall we give a very quick potted summary
Go for it.
of this?
Like
And
it.
now, being aware, I'm going to also have to make a disclaimer statement. I am aware that I am working at a, in a particular role in a particular place, and therefore, this is my thoughts, mine alone. These are based on me. This has nothing to do with my job. This is not expressing a political belief or anything like that. This is expressing my responses to what has been said and actioned. I will not mention the parties involved, as in the political parties involved. I will mention people by their name. I will explain what happened and then I will explain what I did and in front of who I did it, and you will understand that why I am comfortable making these statements. So, who sounds like a very lovely young trans woman called Brianna Guy was murdered in a blatantly transphobic attack by two young teenagers. They were sentenced for her murder. On the day her parents are coming to Parliament, from a position of high privilege, Rishi Sunak made a statement that was transphobic, a transphobic jibe, I believe is the politest way that it's been described, in front of the parents of a murdered trans girl, trans woman. The people sitting behind him laughed and thought this was incredibly funny. The people sitting opposite him challenged this. There is now a discussion within the milieu or the muck of the UK media as to whether or not the statement was transphobic, whether or not it should have been made, and whether or not he should apologise to the parents of the murdered girl that he refers to. And he is denying that he was referring in any way to the murdered girl in his statements. And it was infuriating and upsetting and made me so angry that I was supposed to be running a workshop and I walked into the workshop and I was obviously upset. And my team were like, "Are you okay?" And they received a 5 minute, absolutely fucking fuck level rant about this. And then I realized who I was talking to and on what platform I was talking. And I essentially asked somebody to give me 10 minutes. So they did. And they ran the session for 10 minutes. I then had to go into another meeting with another group of people and they received the same welcome from me because I still had not calmed down from it because it is so upsetting to have that level of transphobia, just that absolute level of transphobia, so ingrained within society and so ingrained that people of privilege can think that it is safe to make it in front of the parents of murdered children. And it gets worse because as the narrative continues and as the polarization continues within the social media, you end up with even people who would support my rights turning around and going, one of the good things of this is that the visibility of Brianna Guy has humanized the debate, which I was like, did you not even consider that I was human before that point? This isn't theoretical. This isn't empty words. This is about us. You're getting up there and you're making statements that impact on me, on Josephine, on our friends, on the groups of people that we barely connect with. All of those people are impacted by this general tirade of transphobia, and it is fueling me into just some white hot rage over and over and over again. How's that for a summary, Josephine?
Yeah, sounds about right.
It started off professional, didn't
Define professional, Jay. I mean, if
But
you're making a valid comment, that was relatively even-handed and didn't even go into ad hominem, I would say you did extremely well. Sounds very professional to me. Yeah. There's more to the story, of course, because it always is. There have been people who've defended this comment, tried to spin it, which is always fun to watch your lives be spun. On the day of this happened, I was on a friend of the show, Samantha Bayard's. That's how they put it. I was a friend of the show. Actually, I'm no longer a friend of their show. Their show is it takes a village. And I'm at the end of which they were very kind and said I was no longer a friend of the show. I was part of the village, and that made me really happy. And so I'll say, villager, it is complicated, Samantha Bayard. They had a lovely live stream, and this happened right before that, and it somewhat threw me for a loop when we started talking. And we got into it a bit, not this exact topic, but just, how much we are affected by these things because they're real. We're real people. And it's so amazing to watch the media narrative shift when something like this, as you say, people are affronted. The fact that Rishi Sunak said this in Parliament in front of the mother of a murdered teenager. And that is affronting. That is despicable behavior. But we're still dehumanized in the narrative. It's so funny because I've watched newspaper articles being printed in newspapers about this, denouncing this and saying what an awful thing he did. And this is part of a horrible narrative that's going on in the UK. And I'm just like, yeah, but no, it's not even comedy anymore to point out the hypocrisy of it. It's absurd. We're not people, we're not humanized. This is where we're not even, we call it a political football. I'm not even that. We're just a figure, right? An image. We don't get to talk. We don't get to react,
We don't get listened to. We don't get interviewed. We don't get included in the narrative. The day before, the New York Times published a whole thing about kids detransitioning because it's better to focus on the, what is it, the 0.3% who might regret. The thing is, when you look at the reasons why people detransition, it's because of the social pressures upon them of being visibly trans or being trans within this world is getting people to go back in the closets because they feel unsupported. I'm not fucking surprised.
The thing that Sam and I ended up talking about was watching your bodily autonomy, your rights disappear before your eyes. It is quite something, knowing that it's very rarely, if ever, about the principle of the people who's taking away your rights. Rishi Sunak, in that moment, demonstrated to me that he does not think of me, people like me, you and me, as people. I actually think him and people like him who make these arguments very rarely think about me at all. They don't care. They don't care. I don't, weirdly enough, I actually don't think they're rapidly transphobic. They're just transphobic because it's easy and it scores points. And points is the way that that kind of mindset thinks. That's how I believe this person functions on the basis of what he was willing to say in that moment, because he didn't think of me as a person, of Brianna as a person, of her mother as a person. And now, watching the fallout play out, it's very obvious that he doesn't think that still. All he's trying to do is spin and massage the message, and the people who've come out to defend it have also been doing that. They're trying very hard. But the thing is, it doesn't look very good right now. The optics are not good right now. And so you see how the narrative is shifting and being broken down. And this is when being a social scientist really sucks because I'm very aware of what's going on. I can see it happening and I can point to it and go, this is what's happening. And here's the big problem with that. I can do nothing about it because even pointing it to it and saying, look, there's the narrative shift. Look, there's the discourse. There is the complete 180. There is the presumption that the people who are saying this now were the ones who were saying the exact opposite merely a day before. No. That's okay, because this is how discourse works. I know this because of the things I read and studied and watched in real time in my own life. But there's nothing I can do about it other than come and talk to you, Jay, which is, I think, a healthy response.
I
But it's painful and demoralizing to a profound extent, so much so that my brain actually cannot take it in. So I smile as I'm saying this. I don't know if you can hear that, listener. I am grinning like the proverbial fool because I don't know what else to do. I feel like making jokes and laughing about it because I can't comprehend this truly. I understand it from a theoretical level. I can even comprehend it and write papers about it if you would like, which I will not because it hurts too much. Except for I'm doing that because I can't help myself. I literally did it the week before this happened. I was writing a paper and having to summarize the current political state of things, which was quite an exercise. I can tell you all these things, but I don't get it. Because the truth of it is, there is nothing human about it. It is inhumane, unhuman to treat people this way. And yet it is so common, we don't even see it. It's too
And
normal.
yeah, it's normalized, and it's this is not the first time we've made an attempt to record something like this, and it's probably not going to be the last. And that's the depressing thing in many ways. And I believe you said at one time, it's personal, but it's not personal. I take it personally because it's personal, but it's not personal for everyone having these commentaries about trans rights. And I know that we talked about it with being non-binary and not even being in the conversation, being under attack, but not even being included in the conversation under attack, because it's all about trans women. Occasionally a trans man is mentioned, but don't even start on them non-binaries. They don't even exist. It's about me, but it's not about me. It's personal, but it's not personal. But it hurts and it gets to you. And I've been doing tons of thinking and processing from other stuff that I was doing, because I went to therapy on Monday. So I'm doing this without any fucking band-aids on. All of my wounds are raw, and then this happens. So of course I'm 90% reactive rather than able to process, and I'm having to go through this just raw as fuck, which is hardcore because you're having to sit there and deal with the impact that this narrative has had on your life. This is not a theoretical discourse. This is not something that happens extent from our outside of our bodies. I don't know the right word there. This is not something that happens outside us. This is something that sits within us, that gets inside our hearts and our minds and makes us uncomfortable at being ourselves, even when you're alone in a house with a cat who's now distressed because I'm upset. And you get so wound up and you make it through. And Kate Bornstein and all of those people, the get out of hell free cards, all of that stuff, they're tools that you use to make it through. But you make it through and you think, oh, I've gotten through it. It's fine. I'm in a much better mental health state. I can deal with all of this. And then again, you recognize the torrent of this that is coming through every single pore, every single bit of media, everything that you read, everything that you follow, every conversation you have has this tinge that goes on. It makes you fearful of interacting with people. It makes you fearful of going outside. It makes everything just so much more fraught than it should be. And it impacts you and it gets inside you and it hurts and it fucking hurts. And I don't know how to fix it. That I wake up every morning in this torrent of shit and still want to exist is extraordinary, because that is the scary thing, that you will wake up and you will go, no, I still want to be here and I want to make this world better. I want to make it so that nobody has to go through what I went through. I want to stop this fucking transphobic narration that goes on. This dehumanization of people like me, of people like Josephine, of people like every single trans and non-binary person, whether or not they come out or not. Because some people don't even get a chance to come out because they can't deal with this. So, yeah. Ta-da. Thank you for listening to my rant. I know what. what I do now, and it's going to sound so idealistic and naive and innocent and all of those things. This darkness, I almost see it as like a pulsar just inside me. And that rage that I used to turn against myself, I now try and channel into queer enthusiasm for everything. Because if I'm going to exist in this world, I'm going to exist full on, full throttle, no holding back whatsoever. People are going to know that I am here. I am going to be in your face. But as part of that is making this place better. I want a better world. We are queers. We are always reaching for that queer utopian vision that is just beyond our fingertips. We are constantly yearning for that better space. That space where we're seen, that space where we're allowed to be ourselves, that space where we can exist proudly. And I'm constantly reaching for that and try and in reaching for it, I try and create it. And to me, that sounds so naive and I don't even know the word impossible. But I think you've got to keep yearning for it, or we will never, ever, ever get there. And I would rather yearn for it and push towards it and drive towards it, because if I do that, the people behind me might get there. The people younger than me might get there. And that's important.
We've had several episodes that have edged towards this. We talked to Darling Auntie Kate about hope and how one retains it against that was in the aftermath of the Roe v. Wade rescinding in the US. And I think it's the only reaction I've ever had. Right at the beginning of this, I talked about, what is my job? I love my adult proper job. It's fabulous. I get to go to work and talk about games and making art all day, every day. That's what I get to do. It's fucking amazing how on earth I got into this position. Well, maybe one day I'll write an autobiography, and goodness knows I'm not entirely sure anybody will read it, but at least I'll have written it down. But that's my job. What I did, and this was me coming up with a kind of response to try to figure out what it is you actually do, was what I said right at the beginning. I'll make anything I can get away with because that's it. It's all I've ever been able to really do is make something in spite of something else in response to this need to speak back, knowing that there are few opportunities to do that in the way that I would really like to, knowing that it will either be not listened to or discounted or just flat out ignored, or there won't be a stage for that, whatever. These things I've accepted many years ago. But the impulse to create nonetheless exists because this is my only answer to this. And the truth is, I've seen this kind of creating help. Maybe it doesn't change the world. Maybe it doesn't lead to utopia, but maybe it touches someone's life. Maybe someone hears it. Maybe someone listens. I've certainly been the recipient of that inspiration. I told a story on that stream about, for the first time, I think I talked about this, about a particularly dark period in my response to that. I've told you, Jay, but not publicly. And my response to these things is creative. To make things, make spaces, make places, make statements in art, whether that be anguish turned into comedy or confounded confusion turned into dance or the desire for hope and space turned into a game. These are the only reactions I have because they're the ones that are available to me. And I do know that they help. I do know that they change minds. I've seen it done. It's changed me to see art that people have made in spite of, because of these things. So I think it's worth it. Will it directly lead to the change that we wish? I don't know. Maybe one of us will be so lucky. Who knows? Right? Hey, shit.
Yeah.
Well, I'll sit there and think, ah, The day I go on all the talk shows because of something I made was just that popular. And what would I say when I did? I don't know. It's a nice fantasy, right? But
It's a lovely fantasy.
I do know that my work may be discounted. I know that my work may even be used against me. Talking about queer life, making it normal, the mere utterance of the possibility that someone like me might be okay seems to be so profoundly upsetting to a group of people who have a hell of a lot of power and are very loud. And I've noticed it more and more over the last 10 years that it went from concerns and questions, as it always does, to bans in certain areas which seem to be palatable to the major populace out of sport. And of course, think of the children. Dear God, think of the children. To suddenly becoming the mere mention of the fact that we are okay and normal human beings is worthy of outrage and protest and think pieces in newspapers and questions of disgust, and should we even be around people? And here is the one that did it to me. There is a law, I'm going to say it's Indiana, I think it is. When I was doing my research for this paper, I was writing, and I apologize, Jay, if this might upset you. Obscene subject matter, obscene matter was recently banned in Indiana. And that includes trans people.
How
Because
can trans people be obscene
we
matter?
are obscene matter. And as such, we are not to be within 300 feet of any school at all.
You motherfucking what?
That's how the law is worded. And when I read that,
I'm gobsmacked.
that's why I don't talk about this very much. It's why I don't even try and write it very much, because it's too upsetting. And don't get me wrong, that was just one example. The introduction to that particular paper is a list of the current legal statutes that have been put through in curbing our identities and who we are. Another law around the same time was literally described as legally erasing trans people from existence, that we legally just don't even exist. These are in the States, but if you'd like, I can find the actual laws for you. But I don't think it's the point. The point
No.
is, we are no longer people.
How did you have any word count to finish writing the fucking paper?
Disassociation.
I know that one of the complications that may come up from me having a birth certificate now that identifies me as non-binary is that the country that I am resident and also citizen of has declared that they will not recognize any gender changes that are not equivalented here with a GRC, but you can no longer obtain a GRC in New Zealand, and I could not obtain a GRC here. But also, nobody does a GRC for fucking non-binary people. So I am beyond existence in all of the forms, but I now have a piece of paper that declares my existence as non-binary from birth, and my name as having been once and forever my current name with no former names, which is an unbelievable gift to get just after Christmas, but also a maddeningly complicated gift to get because nobody knows what to do with this piece of paper. Literally, everyone looks at it and goes, I don't understand how to use this. And because the government may very well soon refuse to recognize it, I don't think they will. I don't quite know what's going on with that. But if they put through yet another of the laws that they're thinking of putting through, it will not allow overseas recognition of my gender to be in this country. So I will be illegal by simply existing. I exist. I am here. We exist. J'existe. That constant refusal to allow us to be human is because it meets a small political momentary gain of some sort for a group of people over some other people for some tiny reason. Is just, if you ever wanted to know what it's like being a pawn in a game, if you ever wanted to know what it's like being a Oh God, my brain has just gone dead. A background character in D&D is not an MVP, it's a
NPC.
NPC. Thank you. I knew it was close. Because that's what the discourse has turned us into in our own fucking lives. I'm the main fucking character here. Well, maybe secondary to Josephine, but still the main fucking character here.
Too adorable. I need to fact check myself. I was quite wrong. It wasn't Indiana that proposed the classification of trans people as obscene matter. It was West Virginia, and it would make it a felony for any trans person to be within 2,500 feet of any school, not 300, I apologize. And it was the bill in Indiana that would legally erase trans peoples from existence in the state entirely. Apologies. I needed to correct myself because it was worse than I thought it was.
I have no idea of 2,500 feet. What's that in normal measurements?
It's very far away.
Okay. That's all I needed to know.
It makes it pretty much impossible to walk around West Virginia.
I live a bit down from a school, and I live a bit up from a nursery, a preschool nursery centre. That's why.
I can tell you the reason, Jay. It's the same reason that anybody in power does this to any group of people. Like I say, this is we're not special. What makes this so much worse, of course, is there are communities that are even more maligned. I happen to be white, I know you are too. The same laws that are being used against trans people in the US are also being used against black people, for example. The book bans that are being happening in the US target predominantly two groups of people, LGBT people and black people and their history. It's not the same thing, but it is born of the same dehumanization. What you've just described, being an NPC, being a pawn, you know, being treated as unhuman, being treated as other. This is the cultural cudgel that's been used by people who want to remain in power for generations. This is the same tired, sad, horrifically awful way that human beings treat each other. I don't understand. There are moments, and I'm sure there everyone else thinks this too. There are moments where I just despair of like, what do we do to each other? How do people treat each other this way? And the only reason they can, and this is the historical truth, is because we're very good at dehumanizing each other. Some people are different. I mean, you hear it right now. Mr. Trump in the US talking about the blood of America being tainted by immigration. This was a couple of weeks ago, right? These are the rhetorics that 60, 70, 80 years ago, very recognizable. Going back further, a couple hundred years ago, the American Constitution still lists anybody who isn't white as three-fifths a human, right? We're very good at doing this, very good at doing this as a species, and for some reason, cannot seem to get over doing it because it's easy. It keeps the status quo. It's normal.
Fuck
That's what's so
normal.
fuck tragic. That's yeah. Why do you think I'm queer? Please.
Oh, come on, normal's so beige. And this is not to put any doubts on queers who love beige, but still, normality. I mean, Jesus.
So the response to this, I look to history, right? How have people responded to this dehumanization throughout history? Because we are not unique little snowflakes as much as I'd like to believe we queer little folk are. Truth is, this is another version of that. There's a reason the anti-trans rhetoric looks exactly the same as the anti-gay rhetoric of the 1980s. There's a reason for that, because
It
it is
is.
the same. And there's a reason why anti-trans rhetoric is happening so surprisingly at the same time as racist rhetoric and anti-women rhetoric. Bodily autonomy is challenged if you say to people, you cannot change your body any way you wish. That's true, not just for trans people. The same laws that are used to erode trans rights are the same laws that were used to defend cis women's rights. That is why they are being attacked at the same time. It's politically expedient to marginalize lots of people all at once. And it's always the same people. Black, queer,
Women.
other immigrants. It's all happening at the same time, isn't it? It's funny how that
Oh yeah.
happens.
Yeah, it's so weird and unusual. It's almost like they're scared of us. It's almost like there's more of us than them. It's almost like we exist and they've suddenly noticed that we exist because we got space to exist. We made it through. We're there. We're in their faces. We're saying, I exist. And they realize that we are very close to winning. That's the piece that I hold onto so tight. And those who know me know that I will hold on to an atom of hope against all rational comprehension as to why I hold on to that atom of hope. I will hold on to an atom of hope of something better happening. And I'm holding on to more than an atom of hope here that we are winning, that the youth of today, those younger than thee and me, Josephine, that youth of today out there who are talking about this, who are looking at this and going, what the actual motherfucking fuck, are going to be the ones who change this, who look at the people in power and go, you what? No, you don't. Unfortunately, the way that society is playing out, they're being held under such economic hostage that they don't get the time and the space and the money and opportunity to organize and to go, you motherfucking what? Queers don't make money. Queers don't make money. And that's another impact of this whole discourse. We know that. Josephine and I know that. That's been part of how we, well, that's part of how this started. That's part of how we bonded. And yeah, when I say this, I mean this podcast, not this world. I was in lockdown and underutilized, and Josephine was unemployed. And basically, I'm going to hesitate to say the word discriminated against, but finding it somewhat difficult to get
No,
employment as a trans
Jay,
person.
you don't need to. Don't hesitate. Say it. It was. I mean, I'm not going to mention who did the discriminating because, unfortunately, I don't have that power and opportunity. It would be very detrimental were it to say who it was, and that sucks, right? But there you go. No. It flat out was. I didn't get a job because I'm trans, is what happened. And then I was very seriously unemployed during this pandemic, like so many people were. But in that particular instance, I found out that a position that I had applied for, I had lost out on because of that. Normally, one has to guess at such things. One presumes that that has an impact. Sometimes you kind of know. In this particular instance, I flat out was told. And so it's like, oh, great. Thanks. Well, in a way, it's good to know. But also,
Yeah.
holy shit, that sucks. This is true. These are the ways in which people have been kept down for millennia. You take away the opportunity to resist, you take away the resources to resist, you exhaust people to the point where they can't speak up. And that is a very good way of controlling them and a very good way of scapegoating. If you want to distract from any other ills that happen to be going on in the world, or if you just want to be the kind of people who get to control people, and it's a really good way of doing it. The funny thing is, I said, Jay, you mentioned this. This is a little sake of mine, is that, the good news is it's not personal. They don't really, really personally hate you. The bad news is it's not personal, which means they'll use you to humanize you. Ignore you, erase you, if it's expedient. That's the fucked up thing. And a truly, truly earth-shattering look into the abyss moment that I find the most difficult to comprehend. Because I can't imagine the mindset you have to get into to do that. And again, it doesn't make me any better, believe me. I've made many, many mistakes in my life, many mistakes, usually as a result of fear and anxiety and anguish. But this is something I'm very glad to say I've never felt I understood on an emotional level. I understand it intellectually. But On that basis, I do also know, looking at history, looking at our communities, understanding our communities, that making something, creating something, being visibly doing those things is the answer to life, the universe, and everything. Because it's the only thing that anyone has ever successfully done is to make space, to speak up in whatever language is available to you at the time. If you look back at feminist history, for example, and black history, this is replete with these things. This is nothing new. Queer history is the same.
So how do we get off the grind? How do we bust it? Or do we just keep grinding along and know that by making the space, by making the stuff, by using whatever tools are at our disposal to have this discourse, to exist violently in front of them?
I have an answer.
Oh my God.
Inspired by conversations and watching other people doing these things. Again, name dropping friend of the show, Sam. They talk about this, advocating for each other. That's the answer. You advocate vociferously. You advocate to an obnoxious level for each other. You push for each other. You take each other with you. If you have an opportunity, you give it to the other person as well. You fight for them. You bring them up. You build them up. That's what you do.
It's about lifting us up. It's seeing people as being close to you. It's seeing people who are different to you. Seeing that genuine connect between us is our oppression, and lifting us up. Because it's not me lifting somebody up who's different to me as a them. It's lifting us up and advocating for us as people who are being dehumanized, being talked about in ways that are incredibly dehumanizing in this discourse. We band together and we lift us up. That is the way out. That is the only way out.
The truly fucked up thing about this kind of rhetoric is it's designed to make you think you're on your own, to isolate you, to make you think that individually you are the problem or you are the exception. This is not true. And so when you and I say, what shall I do? How can I deal with this? What can I do? My answer is no, don't worry. I don't have to have the answer. By advocating for you, that is the answer, because someone else will advocate for me. And they have done. You have done. We exist. Not I, not you. We,
We exist.
as such, by simply embodying advocacy and kindness to each other and being generous, which is one of your most wonderful qualities, Jay. By doing that, that is your political act. That is how things will change. Because granularly, or even just spectacularly, every now and again, this will have an impact on the right people at the right time because you are lifting them up, and as such, we succeed. That's how we
I
win.
think you're right. I think you're right. Wednesday night, I went to the Envy show run by some wonderful young queers that was all about, and it was called Tea for Tea. Of course it was. And it was gorgeous and it was fabulous and it was full. I expected to get there to people raging and mourning, and there were people there going, I'm sick of talking about it. I just want to be here and exist. I want to be here and celebrate being me. I want to be here and be outrageously loud and perform on stage and have people strip mostly naked and have wonderful bodies of different types celebrated and talked about and just perform and just show how we exist. Show that we are here, that we are not people that you can dismiss, because we are here. We exist. I think you're bang on. Shall we kind of be positive?
We are positive.
We are positive. We exist.
We are. We advocate for each other. I know. I see you. Something that my dear friend Molina Williams is a wonderful Molina Williams Haas. We've had it on this podcast, and they still, sorry, Molina, have not managed to edit that episode and put it out because it's very good. She's very good at saying, and I always like it when she does, "I see you," is what she says when I've posted things that are difficult, and I really appreciate that. I see you, Jay. I see you existing. I see that you're there, and I will always advocate for you being there and do my best to bring you up as much as you have done for me, because you most certainly have done.
I
And there
see
you
you as
are.
well. Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Oh, it's all good. It's all good. We're there for each other. And we will be, and we'll be there for people who we don't know yet. It's very exciting. I'm kind of
Absolutely.
looking forward to seeing what happens next and who we meet and
Oh, yes.
who we bring onto this fabulous podcast that we have managed to keep going for the last 4 years.
And it's over 60 episodes. I'm
I
like,
know.
that's kind of scary.
And it would be more if Josephine got to actually editing something.
Oh yeah, but you have a life. So you have a life and a wife and a child and a snow and a book and all of this stuff. And I have me and the cat.
And a life and art and generosity and kindness and advocacy that you spend a tremendous amount of your time doing. You're a very busy person, Jay. Do not
And I
belie
occasionally
that.
get to play, and I occasionally get to play music and or go listen to music and see, hear new voices and be inspired by seeing different voices and different people do things, because I'm still on Every Performance Changes Your Life.
So tell me something breathtaking, Jay. What performances have you experienced that are breathtaking? Or who have, what characters, what deliciousness have you been,
So
has taken your breath away recently?
it's not so much taken my breath away, it's soothed me, it's sat with my brain, it's been the right thing. And I don't know why, but I have become obsessed, like ridiculously, by playing Billy Joel. And there's just part of me going, yes, Billy Joel, yes, that Billy Joel, that person, you've been listening to their music almost nonstop for like 4 days now. And I did what we always have to do. If we're going to talk about somebody, you have to go to Wikipedia and make sure that they haven't accidentally gone, oh, magic sex pest, or oh, magic something else. No, he's actually, it really seems, a really decent bloke who suffers really badly from depression. And that's possibly why his music and his lyrics are just totally vibing with my brain and just making it okay to be angry and hopeful and rage-filled and earnest and all the things that we are. And that's kind of cool. And I also, there's part of me that kind of likes the fact that I am enthusiastic in a way that you were never allowed to be enthusiastic. You were always supposed to be a little bit more detached. It's like, oh yeah, well, he's okay, but he's a bit middle of the road and he's not quite. Blah, 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 blah. No, I can be enthusiastic. I don't have to be that detached, aloof. Oh, I'm slightly better than this. I, his early music, blah, blah. No, I love this music, and I realized part of the reason is that I grew up with it on the radio all the time. His stuff was popular as I grew up as a kid, and it would have been played on the radio all the time. So it's got a familiarity, but it's his lyrics bang. His music slaps. His songwriting's really good. He's got so much emotion in there. And some of the songs, I mean, Second Wind has just been playing out. Anthony's song's been playing out. I'm vibing for it. So yes, I have also watched a Keanu Reeves movie, but I will save that for next time, because Billy Joel, breathtaking. Absolutely. I'm not sure. You don't look like you agree, or you just haven't had the vibey.
No. I'm hearing you. All good.
But also, his Russian concert album was the first vinyl that I bought that wasn't like a kid's album. But I have also been listening to the Muppet Show cast album simply for their version of Tenderly. They do this version of Tenderly, which is just, oh my God, it is so good. And it's become also one of those ones that I just, it plays and I just start kind of feeling happy. And that's part of the things, is these songs are touching me and giving me hope. They're fueling the hope, not the rage. They're fueling the right part of me. and saying it's okay to be this angry and here's hope. It's okay to be this angry and here's a totally silly version. I will find a YouTube of it and put it in the show notes or whatever they call them, in the linky things under the potty thing.
I don't think I can even provide an example as good as that. Breathtaking, Billy Joel, sure. Well, then I'll say thank you very much, Jay, for a conversation that I'm not entirely sure how I'm going to edit or even if it'll go out. So that's going to be exciting for us. I think it might be actually. I think we actually managed to get through it this time. I think there might be something I can edit together.
I think there's some really good bits in there.
Yeah, me too. We don't have credits. We should at the end, shouldn't we? We should have somebody speaking very softly going, "And this podcast was produced by two people who are talking on
Yes.
it." And yes, I did the
The people what
music
did the
and
talking do everything.
I recorded the Plinky Plonky theme tune on this microphone using my ukulele. I drew the pictures for the cover art and I edit this every time we do one. It is one of the reasons why it's slow because I try to edit carefully and it takes a long time. And with everything else I'm doing, it can be a bit slow. So I apologize for that, dear listener. I am very grateful for those of you who stick around, even with a bit of an erratic schedule. I am particularly grateful to those who have chosen to support us on Patreon, which is patreon.com/itiscomplicated, all one word. Thank you for sticking around. Thank you for supporting us, even though sometimes it takes a while for me to get these out. We're tremendously grateful to your support. It is a huge vote of confidence that you give us. And we use that money to pay for the guests that we have because we think everybody's effort is worth remuneration in this ridiculous system that we call capitalism. So we try to do that. But if you don't feel that you can do that, if you don't have the money to support us in that way, that is more than fine. What I would like for you to do is to pretty please come back next time I manage to get an episode up. And also, if you wouldn't mind rating us somewhere, that's a way that you can do something. If you would like to support us, it's very good to have reviews and ratings because, as Jay says, we explicitly do not advertise ourselves in certain ways because we know that that means this podcast would not be accessible in certain places to certain people. It does rather mean that we're relatively limited in where we can get to. So, anything like that, feel free to share. And to rate and hopefully come back next time.
And if you like us, tell your friends. Tell your
Yes,
friends
do.
about us
Tell your
because
friends, tell your enemies, tell everyone.
tell the person in the street.
We're coming.